One of the biggest issues surrounding idolatry, as we mentioned, was the influx of formerly pagan Gentiles into the believing community. For the most part, Jews of the first century had little contact with Gentiles, or at least tried to limit it. One of the rabbinic prohibitions was that Jews were not even allowed to enter Gentile homes or eat with them. The Mishnah states, "The dwelling places of Gentiles are unclean." Although there were several reasons for such prohibitions as these, one of the primary concerns was coming into contact with idolatry. Because Avodah Zarah was such a temptation before Babylonian captivity, the sages set up many fences to help ensure that the Jewish people would not even come close to pagan worship. The prohibition on not entering a Gentile household is most likely what the Roman centurion is referring to when he says to Yeshua, "I am not worthy for you to come under my roof." He assumes that the master, as a Jew who is faithful to the Torah, would not come into his house. In fact, this prohibition is so strongly ingrained in the minds of the first century Jews that it takes a vision from heaven in Acts chapter 10 to convince Simon Peter that it is okay to enter Gentile houses and eat with them. Naturally, then, it would be necessary for the apostles to make some rulings for these new Gentile converts. In Acts chapter 15, at the Jerusalem Council, the question is posed, should new Gentile converts be forced to make a formal conversion to Judaism and thus be obligated to the whole Torah or not? The decision is that they should remain as Gentiles, but in order to allow fellowship between these non-Jews and the Jewish disciples of Yeshua, they are required to keep four commandments. In verse 19, James states, "Therefore it is my judgment that we do not trouble those who are turning to God from among the Gentiles, but that we write to them that they abstain from things contaminated by idols and from fornication and from what is strangled and from blood." It comes as no surprise, given the background of excessive paganism in the Gentile world, that one of these commandments involves Avodah Zarah. The phrase, "things contaminated by idols," is literally pollutions of idols. In this, the apostles were binding the Gentiles to the injunction from Deuteronomy chapter 7 and verse 26, which forbid deriving any benefit from things tainted with idolatry. It is curious that the other two times in the book of Acts that these four prohibitions are mentioned, the wording is changed to "abstain from things sacrificed to idols." There is also the textual variant on this phrase in Western manuscripts of "abstain from idolatry." It would be taken for granted that these Gentiles would be required to forsake idol worship, but abstaining from food that had been tainted by idolatry would be a bit more difficult, and thus the apostles felt the need to specify this. However, according to Torah Club, each of these prohibitions was connected to Avodah Zarah. Each law targets a specific facet of Hellenistic paganism: blood rituals, meat sacrifice to idols, ritual feasts, sexual immorality, whether overt temple prostitution or covert promiscuity. Each of these prohibitions applied specifically to the religious practices of the pagan worship system of the diaspora. These four laws will ensure that the Gentiles are no longer participating in the idolatry of their local temples, thereby making it possible for them to fellowship in the synagogue. Under James's proposal, the Gentile believer would not need to have his foreskin removed in order to be considered a brother in Messiah. However, he would have to give up consorting with Diana's temple prostitutes before the hand of fellowship would be extended to him. As the apostles begin to spread the gospel among the Gentiles, they predictably come into contact with Avodah Zarah. In the book of Acts, we see Paul and the apostles facing off with idolatry again and again in multiple stories as the gospel begins to advance outside the confines of Jewish territory. There is the story, for example, of Paul and Barnabas in Lystra, where the locals mistook the two apostles as Zeus and Hermes and tried to sacrifice them. There is the story of the fortune-telling possessed girl in Philippi, and of course, the big riot in Ephesus when the local idol makers decide that Paul's teaching is hurting business. These stories are just the tip of the iceberg. Church tradition contains lots and lots of apocryphal stories of the other apostles and their collisions with idolatrous priests and temples as they advanced the gospel into Gentile lands. Now, these stories are legends, of course, but they represent the very real situation in the 1st century, 2nd century, and 3rd century Roman world. Except for John, the son of Zebedee, all 12 of the Master's disciples died as martyrs, and according to tradition, 10 of them died as martyrs because their proclamation of the gospel disrupted the status quo of idolatry. Church legend is full, absolutely full of stories about the apostles facing off with idolatry. And church history is full of stories of brave martyrs who died terrible deaths only because they refused to worship idols. We could tell those stories all day, but suffice to say that the early believers, unless they were Jewish, had no protection under Roman law. Therefore, we read Roman accounts about persecutions of believers where a Roman governor explains how he does it. When he arrests a believer, he asks them to curse the name of Yeshua and bow down before an idol. If they will do it, he lets them go free. In the book of Acts, Paul addresses idolatry directly when he enters the city of Athens, in an interesting story in Acts chapter 17. Now while Paul was waiting for them at Athens, his spirit was being provoked within him as he was observing the city full of idols. Torah Club gives us some background. The famous city of Athens was a center of Hellenistic thought and life. It was one of the three Roman university cities, along with Tarsus and Alexandria. Like university climates everywhere, it was characterized by a population of people who spent their time doing nothing but talking about and listening to the latest idea. It was also a religious center for the worship of the Olympian gods since ancient times. It was a city forested with idols and altars. There was a Jewish community in Athens, so Paul proceeded to teach in the synagogue amongst the Jews and God-fearing Gentiles. But the ubiquitous idols of the city distressed him. For the first time since the disaster of Lystra, Paul decided to take the gospel message directly to the Gentiles outside of a synagogue context. He began to teach in the marketplace to whoever would stop and listen. Let's pick up on the story in verse 23. Paul exhorts them, "For while I was passing through and examining the objects of your worship, I also found an altar with this inscription, 'To an unknown God.' Therefore, what you worship in ignorance, this I proclaim to you. The God who made the world and all things in it, since he is Lord of heaven and earth, does not dwell in temples made with hands, nor is he served by human hands, as though he needed anything, since he himself gives to all people life and breath and all things. And he made from one man every nation of mankind to live on all the face of the earth. Having determined their appointed times and the boundaries of their habitation, that they would seek God, if perhaps they might grope for him and find him, though he is not far from each one of us. For in him we live and move and exist, as even some of your own poets have said, 'For we also are his children.'"